But really, it's a great pleasure to be here at KTP again, and actually, it's a great place to come and interact with other people. And you know, you can only appreciate it fully when you're far and away, and you know, the time becomes more and more important to have such escapes. All right, so the story that I would like to tell today is it's a fairly short story about the holographic zero sound behavior at finite temperature. And this is a work which will hopefully appear in the archive soon. And most of it has been done by my graduate student, Richard Davison, who, by the way, is applying for his first postdoc at all. It's really the bulk of the of what I'm going to say is really his work. The story summarized in one slide is the following. In a system of interacting fermions at low or even zero temperature, there exists a collective excitation known as the zero sound. It was predicted to exist by Landau in 1957 and subsequently observed in liquid helium-3 in the 1960s. So temperature dependence of the zero sound mode is described at sufficient low temperature by Landau thermoliquid theory. So for example, in liquid helium-3, we are talking about temperatures which are just above the superfluid phase transition, but still sufficiently low to in comparison to the chemical potential or roughly normalized. A similar mode, which we'll call holographic zero sound because it comes from systems in with holographic duals, was shown to exist in holographic models at zero temperature, in particular the 3D7 system and some other systems. And the story which I'm going to tell today is the story of understanding the finite temperature behavior of this holographic zero sound mode. Right? So that this computation has been done at zero temperature before, and now we just want to know what happens when the temperature is non-zero but still small in comparison to density or chemical potential of the system. Okay? So this is a summary of what I'm going to say. All right, so the outline is the following. I will say a few words about zero sound in Landau thermoliquid theory and even mention some experimental results for helium-3 just to confirm that this thing actually describes what's happening in nature. And then we'll talk about holographic zero sound, specifically in the 3D7 system in the probe brain approximation. All right, so zero sound in Landau thermoliquid theory. There are original Landau papers appearing from 1956, and then specifically zero sound was discovered in 1957. This can be generalized to a relativistic version. In particular, there is this paper by Bain and Chin, 1976. And of course, there is a microscopic story, which is very deep and beautiful, understanding the Landau thermoliquid as an effective field theory, and some references to that, including a paper by Joe, written here. So in Landau thermoliquid, the dominant low energy excitations are quasi-particles carrying the same quantum numbers as fundamental particles. We have the thermosphere of these quasi-particles, and quasi-particle energy will be denoted by epsilon k as a bit close to thermosphere, which is proportional to the square of the epsilon k minus chemical potential, or E Fermi squared. And it has in equilibrium, it has a distribution function which looks like a normal Fermi distribution function, except epsilon k now is a functional of the distribution function itself. So this is a functional relationship, if you wonder, or the equation which is which has to be self-consistently solved for nk. At low temperature and close to Fermi surface, the excitations, the particle excitations are have the following spectrum, where V Fermi is the Fermi velocity, and you can define for non-relativistic systems, but this can be also generalized for a relativistic case, an effective mass M star, which is one of the Landau parameters, one of the important parameters of Landau thermoliquid theory, which is simply defined as K Fermi over this parameter of the Fermi. And if you want experimentally, so if you look at the system experimentally, you determine K Fermi from the density of the particles in your system, so this is equal to the density of quasi-particles. So you read off the K Fermi from this equation. And then if you measure quantities such as specific heat, so specific heat in the system is proportional to temperature with a coefficient which involves this m star. And therefore, if you measure experimentally specific heat, then you have this parameter m star. All right, so this is thermodynamics. Now, the energy of the system, so the first equation on the slide is basically the definition of epsilon k, but you can also view it, so the full energy of the system, of course, is the integral of epsilon k times the distribution function, so the small variation of energy comes from the small variation of nk. Now, what is mostly important is that the second variation of energy would be the variation of the epsilon k, and this involves this function f, which is, can be seen as the second variation of capital E with respect to n's, and this is a famous Landau interaction function, which can be expanded to Legendre polynomials, and this expansion would yield the so-called Landau parameters. L here labels the corresponding Legendre polynomial. So if you know these parameters and you know K Fermi, so you can predict some properties of the system by measuring some of them and then predicting other properties if you have, if you can know numerically these coefficients. So in physical systems, this is normally what is done. In Euclidean interacting theory, this function f, interaction function, can be computed perturbatively. So if you have, for example, quantum field theory of interacting fermions and gauge bosons and scalars, then you can do perturbative calculations and determine this f or these parameters, capital F and g, as a function of the coupling in the Euclidean interacting theory, just by Feynman diagrams. Now, suppose we want to study small deviations from equilibrium. Small deviations from equilibrium will come from fluctuations of this distribution function, which now will depend not only on momentum, but also on position and time. And one can show that in this case, so you have a Fermi sphere of quasi-particles, and some of them close to Fermi sphere are excited. So you have a sufficiently dilute gas of quasi-particles, and you can write down the kinetic equation or a transport equation, which in this case is known as Landau-Seelin transport equation, for these deviations from equilibrium. So this looks pretty much like a Boltzmann type equation, but the right-hand side will describe the interaction of these quasi-particles. But also, even if the right-hand side is zero, there is a term here with delta epsilon, if you remember the previous slide. Well, delta epsilon will involve this interaction function f. So in the zero temperature limit, then the right-hand side is vanishing, so the interaction of these quasi-particles is the gas is more and more dilute as temperature goes to zero. Even in the case when I is vanishing, you still have non-trivial parameters f coming from this term. And you can look for solutions of this equation with the right-hand side zero and find the wave-like oscillator-like solutions, which essentially what Landau did in 57, and these solutions for fluctuations of delta n are known as the zero sum. So the parameters, yes, so the dispersion relation, so you solve, so again, you solve for this delta n. You can picture these fluctuations as the fluctuations in shape of the associated Fermi surface of the quasi-particles. And you can find the dispersion relation for this collective mode, the zero sound, of this type, right? So it has the real part, which is linear in momentum, and then there is some damping due to interaction of the quasi-particles that you can compute. So in quantum theory, this appears as a pole in the density-density correlation function, so this dispersion relation. So in particular, if you have a holographic dual to your system, the appearance of this pole will manifest itself as the low viscosity normal frequency in the spectrum of the dual gravity background. That's what you expect. So you have a fundamental fermions in the system. You expect, generically, the appearance of such a pole in the density-density correlator. And these computations have been done, and indeed, in the system such as B3D7, where you do have fundamental fermions, although in raw brain approximations, so they follow these footnotes and caveats, so I can say about this approximation. But you do see this pole, right? The pole of this type, this is gravity result, with the speeds of zero sound. So this is at zero, exactly at zero temperature. With the speed equal to the speed of first sound in a conformal system, 1 over square root of 3, and attenuation gamma, which depends on Q squared and inversely proportional to the chemical potential.
So the strength of the interaction doesn't enter much.
The strength
of the interaction?
No.
Doesn't?
No. 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 It comes, so there is this term in front of the correlator, right? Because it's a probe brain, right? So there is this lambda factor which comes.
But in the weak level limit, this is the velocity is the same?
So in weakly coupled limits, there is this interesting phenomenon happening. So one can have a model. So of course, let me say it correctly. So if you take, for example, a relativistic model of fermions coupled to gauge bosons and some scalars, let's say, right, and do weak coupling calculations along the lines I just outlined, you discover that the first sound speed is not equal to the zero sound speed. You discover these poles, but the speeds are not equal. And you can compute corrections in powers of coupling, which has been done by Baim in particular in that paper that I mentioned, but they are not equal. However, if you take a model where you parametrize these Landau thermal liquids with this f, this functions f, one of them, f naught, is sort of morally speaking proportional to a coupling in the system. And you can plot the first sound and the zero sound as a function of this f naught. And this plot is shown in Pine's Nazier book on quantum liquids. And you see that as f naught goes to infinity, the speed of zero sound and speed of first sound approach each other. And in fact, in the limit, they're equal. So it's maybe not too surprising that we recover here in this zero temperature mode, we recover a speed of zero sound exactly equal to the speed of first sound. At least it's compatible with this model. Right. But of course, this is just, this model, one may question, so it doesn't come from summation of any diagrams or just a formal solution of this Landau-Seelin-Pomeranchuk equation with parameterized by these f's. So it's not entirely clear if that is a generic phenomenon. So if you compute in some generic system as a function of coupling, that this will happen.
Oh, right. Yeah, this discussion earlier, but just to get it straight, right? It's a pole in the density-density correlator.
That's right.
And that's what physically is just a pressure wave. Right? So there's no difference in the qualitative nature of zero sound and first sound. Right? And I guess the real statement is that when you talk about first sound, it's how the dynamical sound that needs finite temperature and so forth.
Yep.
Generically, when you have a quantum liquid at zero temperature and it's not associated with the fact it's a condensate, post-condensate, you expect it to have sound.
Yes, but it will be.
And there's no reason to think it has any relationship to a Landau Fermi liquid, right, when you do a DV7 system a priori. It's just a metaphor. I mean, in order to prove it's a Landau Fermi liquid, you have to do really different tests than just sound, because sound is universal in the liquid.
Yes, I'm not trying to prove that.
Just to get it
what
straight.
Is happening in holographic system is really, so this is the reason why it is called holographic zero sound,
yeah.
Not zero sound,
zero,
right?
Sound. Zero temperature.
What, sound. Yes. What we see is a certain mode at zero temperature in holographic dual, right? And we want to study its properties and see what happens, right? This is all I'm saying, right?
I have a question. If you have a charged fermion liquid, you don't really have zero sound, you have plasmons with a plasmon gap.
Yep.
So in this theory that you are considering, does Chris want the short-range interactions or long-range interactions?
The interactions, so it's not short-ranged.
So why don't you have a plasmon gap?
Probably because it's neutral. I mean, we have, so it's a baryonic, so the charge, I will tell in a second what charge. So these are not electrons. I mean, these things are not charged. So you can think of neutrons.
It's related to some global U1.
Yes. It's a baryonic. Yeah, it's a baryonic charge. It's a baryonic. It just counts the fermions. Right,
so you're at zero temperature, but you still have energy. You've added energy above the Fermi energy to get this mode.
What is the Fermi energy? I mean, it's so we have, it's not clear, so it's zero temperature, right? So it's, from geometrical point of view, it's just ADS, right? ADS5 with embedded D7 brain. So in that sense, you add energy probably because you turn on some background field on the brain.
Well, you took dissipation, so something is, you know, the mode is going away, so you must, well, you have frequency and stuff. So there must be some energy in the mode, which mm-hmm. is dissipating. So to get to excite this zero sound, you've got
to find
energy.
Yes. So the energy. So if you compute, one point function, right? So the energy of the system is not zero, right? So it's above. So like in n equals 4 super Hamiltonian, for example, when you compute energy density, it will be proportional to t to the fourth, right? At any non-zero temperature. So here we have a proportionality to mu, right? Which is a chemical potential or density of the system. Yes, that's probably the dissipation.
Two questions. Following up to Derek, in the Fermi liquid feature, mm-hmm. I mean, is this a collected information in the Fermi surface?
That's right, yes.
So mm-hmm. in that sense, there's energy because it's deforming the Fermi surface.
Yes, but here, unfortunately,
Oh, I see. But in the condensed matter system, you deform the Fermi surface, not really. Well,
I mean, so.
Yeah. I get it right. It is, in essence, a hydrodynamical statement that the Q squared is basically saying you have a hydrodynamically conserved density and therefore it attenuates by Q squared.
Well, except that this is at zero temperature, right?
And absolutely.
This dispersion relation doesn't come. Yeah. So in fact, we will see in a moment what happens at finite temperature and how the transition to the normal, to the hydrodynamic regime is happening.
So the significance really is that you have a volume from U in front of the attenuation Q squared, right? And that's telling you that the energy scale associated with that attenuation is set by the U.
Right.
Silly question. Can you remind me what happens in extreme Lorentz black planes?
It's a rather profound question, and if you allow me, I would postpone this until the end because. There is a certain story about RN and so on, and in fact I may not be the best qualified person to have better qualified people in the audience to talk about, but it will be different, not fundamentally different, but slight. Okay, yeah, let's talk about this in the end if you could remind me.
So the usual sound mode will be defined as usual by the TT correlation.
That's right. Yeah.
But this is just somehow you've seen the Fermi
density. Yes. Yeah. So thank you. Yes. So this is an important caveat in the sense that so this is a holographic system in this probe brain approximation where we don't have a back reaction of these D7 brains. On the huge bulk where our n equals 4 supernumerals sits, right? So in this sense, the sound, right, the usual first sound. So if you compute thermodynamics of the system, you still recover the equation of state epsilon equal to 3p, and therefore the speed of first sound will be equal to 1 over square root of 3. Right. It will not be affected by this thing, the attrition, right? In the probe brain approximation. But of course, once you turn on the back reaction, of course, there should be interaction between the fluctuations, and therefore these poles will feel presence of each other, but not in this approximation. Right. All right. So. Okay, so before coming to, so let me remind you where we were. So before coming to the story with brains and holography and so on, so this is still Landau liquid theory. So I just want to review briefly what is happening in the normal Landau thermal liquid story as far as this zero sound mode is concerned at finite temperature, right? So what happens at finite temperature? So zero sound mode is affected by quasi-particle interactions. And this can be understood in terms of kinetic theory of quasi-particles. So if tau is the mean time between the quasi-particle collisions, then you can distinguish three regimes for a collective mode with frequency omega. This so-called collisionless quantum regime, collisionless thermal regime, and hydrodynamic regime, with some transitions between them, right? And these regimes, the existence of these regimes, can be understood rather simply by comparing the frequency of this collective mode oscillation to the frequency, or you can think in terms of time. So this is so tau is the mean time between quasi-particle collisions. So omega has some inverse time, let's call it capital T. And this is the time reciprocal to omega during which this distribution function n changes appreciably, right? So capital T. So in this regime, for example, it's clear that so this would be tau much greater than this capital T, right? It means that the time between quasi-particle collisions is much, much larger than the time during which this delta N appreciably changes. And therefore, this delta N can change as many times as you want, and while quasi-particles are still far, far away, right? And that means that so this is why it's called collisionless quantum regime, right? There are no collisions, and you can wait for a long, long time before collisions happen and affect your mode. And meanwhile, you have a zero temperature oscillations, which give you zero sound. So in this regime, you actually expect, from these very simple considerations, you actually expect that the mode itself will not be very much different from the zero temperature mode. So even though you are at finite temperature. And this is confirmed. So another regime is collisionless thermal regime, where you still have this picture of the sort of long time between the collisions. But the relationship between the frequency and temperature changes. So here you have a frequency which is much larger than temperature, and here is the opposite regime. In Landau thermal liquid kinetic theory, you can actually compute this tau. And it's a certain calculation which is described again in books like Volume 9 of Landau-Lifschitz or Pines-Nazier or some other books. And the bottom line is that you have expression of this type from which you can read, so you can substitute these inequalities into this equation. You can read how tau scales, the temperature omega and so on, in these two regimes. And finally, you have the hydrodynamic regime, which is the opposite one. The opposite one meaning that during the time that delta N changes appreciably, you have zillions of these collisions of quasi-particles. So it's the opposite picture. And therefore, the zero sound, original zero temperature, zero sound mode is completely destroyed by these quasi-particle collisions. So you have something else. What you have is a hydrodynamic regime where you have usual thermal collisions, and therefore you expect normal sound to propagate and so on. And for this regime, you only have in terms of relationship between omega and T, this inequality. In a moment, I'll explain why there's no opposite quantum, so-called hydrodynamic quantum regime. Right. So these are three regimes that we expect to see.
So in which regime do you have both zero sound and first sound, and how do they differ exactly?
You will see in a moment. Can I just? There will be some plot that will show. So we have these three regimes. One can use the appropriate variable. So the variable which is very convenient to use is omega normalized by mu, a very low temperature. And these three regimes give rise to, so if you substitute, if you do the substitution here, you will discover that these regimes are separated by certain scales. So in terms of omega over mu, this separation scales will be T over mu. This is the separation between collisionless thermal and collisionless quantum regime. And collisionless thermal and hydrodynamic regime are separated by another scale, which is Q over mu squared in terms of this variable. Right? You can also use the more convenient, the variables which are more convenient in the hydrodynamic regime, which is omega over T and Q over T. And again, you have these two scales, but now, of course, right? Landau thermal liquid theory has some applicability conditions. So one of them is that the system is degenerate, so you're dealing with quantum liquid. That means that temperature is much less than the Fermi or chemical potential. And then there is a second condition, which is omega and Q must be much smaller than mu or E Fermi. And this simply means that the wavelength of these fluctuations, such as zero sound mode and so on, are larger than the typical interparticle distance in your system. So in other words, you're not down to the quantum mechanics. So this is still, so you can still describe your system by distribution functions and so on. Right? So you have, so this wavelength of this mode is larger than interparticle interaction, interparticle distance. Okay. This second condition. So Landau thermal liquid theory in some sense can be considered as an expansion in terms of this parameter omega over mu, which is small. And the first term gives you thermal liquid theory, and then there are corrections to it. Sometimes this is the same. So these two conditions are the reason why, on the previous slide, you couldn't have a quantum hydrodynamic regime, because if you have omega tau much less than 1 and omega much greater than T, you violate one of these conditions, namely the second one. So this condition would be violated. Right? So you have not four, but three regions. All right. So now let's see how zero sound behaves in these three regimes. Well, so you have a dispersion relation, typically written as omega as a function of Q, right, that was shown before. But experimentally, it's quite, sometimes it's useful actually to invert it and write Q, treating omega as real variable in the frequency or some experimental thing, and then read off Q as a function of omega, and then you have imaginary part, which is denoted as gamma Q. Another useful quantity to plot is the argument of this Q as a function of omega. But then you do this kinetic theory in Landau Fermi liquid, and you have predictions based on this tau and so on, how these gammas and the argument should behave in each of these three regimes. So these predictions are summarized in the table like this. So we can look, for example, at collision with quantum regime, and see that gamma omega behaves as Q squared over mu. And this is something that we actually saw at exactly zero temperature in the holographic models. But what happens when the temperature becomes larger? You go to collisionless thermal regime, and the dependence changes. Now there is no Q dependence at all, right? So there is a T squared dependence of gamma omega over mu. And the same things can be repeated for the argument of Q. So the question is, do you see a rather sharp difference between the behavior of attenuation as you turn on the temperature? The parameter we are dealing with is the ratio of temperature to chemical potential. So this will go from zero to some value, but still within the constraint that T much less than mu. Okay. That's... All right, you can also present this in some plots. For example, you can plot argument of Q normalized to chemical potential as a function of omega. And again, so there are these three regimes. So this is the collisionless quantum regime, this is the collisionless thermal regime, and this is the hydrodynamic regime. And the scaling of this function with omega was presented in the table in the previous slide. And you can see, of course, the scaling is approximate in the sense that you have this transition region between let's say, 1, 2, and 3, and there is no function, analytic function, that describes the full range of dependence. But asymptotically, the scaling is obeyed. And again, you have these two scales, Q over mu and Q over mu squared, which separate these two regions. In fact, this is another plot which now describes not the argument of Q is function of omega, but the attenuation gamma as a function of temperature, again normalized by chemical potential. And again, you have these Fourier regimes. So this is hydrodynamic, this is collisionless thermal, this is collisionless quantum. And you can compare this with experimental data obtained in liquid helium. In fact, this is how Landau theory was confirmed by experiments with neutron scattering in liquid helium. So you can see in this plot sort of appearance of this dome here for different, so two different frequencies. So one set of data and another set of data correspond to different frequencies. But basically, the important thing is that you actually see experimentally the appearance of this dome. You don't see this quantum collisionless regime too much here, mostly because this region is very close to the superfluid phase transition already. So this is microkelvin scale. And I'm not aware. So this is a plot of 1966. I'm not aware of maybe more recently people sort of refined this. I don't know what happened.
Is it actually in megahertz and neutrals are easier kilohertz? Isn't it just ultrasound?
Well,
in these days that it could measure neutrals at megahertz. Nowadays, again, it's fancy neutron spin angle techniques, whatever. Never just sound, right? You can do this with ultrasound.
Yes, of course.
This matter.
For me, such details are a little bit going too far. But the thing is that these predictions actually work. And now you want to know what happens in holography, right? At finite temperature, do you actually see the appearance of the three regions, how this attenuation behaves, and so on. So all these questions, right? So of course, again, so I'm not trying to prove that in holography, we see the appearance of the Landau Fermi liquid zero sound, but it's worthwhile to just compare the regimes we are talking about here with what you see in holographic models. All right, so the model in question is D3D7. I won't spend any time on just last day we had the talk by Andy O'Bannon, who described it in great detail. So you treat, so you have n equals 4 supermills, and you add nf, n equals 2 fundamental fermions and scalars. In holography, you treat this in the probe brain approximation, in which n equals 4 supermills is represented by ADS5 or ADS Schwarzschild at finite temperature metric, and you embed these D7 brains into this background, which is described by DBI action. So from a field theory point of view, so one nice thing about sort of thinking of zero sound in terms of this particular system is that it has a microscopic description. So in principle, you can write down the Lagrangian and say that we don't know anything about holography. So here is a Lagrangian, a Hamiltonian, just go and calculate what properties like Bain did and so on, except that, of course, you want to work at strong coupling and it's difficult to apply any techniques except for holography. But in principle, you should be able to see how these modes behave in a microscopic, from microscopic point. All right, so at finite temperature, you have this idea Schwarzschild black brain metric with the particular temperature. Now, there is a chemical potential involved if you turn on the ground value of the U1 field. So the charge in question will be a baryonic charge of this UNF symmetry, right? So you have the chemical potential, which is dual to the conserved charge density, and this charge density is baryonic U1. So parameters of the model are the temperature, this baryonic chemical potential, and also the hypermultiplet mass. So for most of the time, I will put this M, this extra parameter, to zero, because we don't see a very strong dependence on M in what we are seeing in this model. But in principle, it is there, and you can study the properties also with this extra parameter. So with M0, you have one dimensionless parameter, which is mu over T, Q over mu. This is Q over mu, which is small. And this is precisely what the parameter that was on the Landau Fermi liquid side. OK, so we focus on this retarded current density correlator at finite temperature and chemical potential. As I already said, at zero temperature and finite density and zero hypermolecular mass, you have this mode. So here I remind you that omega bar and q bar are omega and q normalized by mu. So this is omega over mu and q over mu. So you can present it in this form. The only time I mention finite density is this equation. So you can generalize this calculation of the zero sound mode to finite hypermolecular mass that has been done by Andrei Parnachev and Manuela Kolaksidi. And then you recover, you have the expression like this, zero attenuation. So this M is mass of the hypermass normalized by the chemical potential as well.
Yeah, so I guess the fact that everything expresses in omega of mu and q of mu, that's just a simple scaling reason for it, right?
Well, yes, of course. Yeah, it's in the. You can rescale it. And there is no profound. It's just convenient because you start with zero temperature, right? So it's not very convenient to normalize it by T.
Yeah.
Right, that's.
So you have to ask the question whether this kind of simple scaling is actually at work in thermal liquid. I don't think so. That was you were arguing about the F0 entering, right?
No, I think, I'm not sure. I mean, at zero temperature, right, this mode is attenuation has a q squared over density to the third, right? So it's
not that you argue that in the Fermi liquid, the attenuation coefficient knows about the zero. But so when you go to the Fermi gas limit, it can only be an EF and nothing else. But
right. It's
in physical, right? It needs to have lambda parameters, and they will destroy the scaling mechanism.
So what's happening if I set M to 1, for example?
What is happening? So something bad happens, I think. it is also spirit of 3, right? To be honest, we have not really investigated these extreme regimes of mass coming. So this D3D7 system is very rich in terms of various transitions. So there are some bound states that also appear in different regime. And if you turn on, if the mass is sufficiently large, then you also have some phase transitions, some instabilities, and so on. And all of this has been investigated in enormous literature on that. Our goal was very modest. We just wanted to investigate this mode for sufficiently small m, right? So I don't. So maybe actually Manuela, who is sitting next to you, or Andrei could explain what happens when m is equal to 1. And, so most probably it means m equals to 1 is outside of the regime of stability of the system.
What happens for m less than for m greater than 1 is that the mode doesn't even exist.
Yes, but I think even before that you will come to some regime where you violate some stability conditions. So this system is pretty complex. I mean, despite being so simple, right?
Well, there's
in appearance.
One transition is that m equals 1. If you just turn on chemical potential.
Okay. Yes, but there is also finite density issue.
But there's only two.
Right.
There's only one dimensional parameter in this M, and there's a transition at N equals 1.
Okay. Okay. Oh, yeah. Okay. Okay. Great. Yes.
So you're at T equals 0 here.
Yeah. So far. Yeah.
So at some point the DDI description breaks down because you get to a critical electric field. Is that right?
That is probably.
But this one is away from.
This is away. Yeah. This is all instability region of the.
In other words, omega and q are big enough that their functions are peaked up the throat somewhere. Critical electric field is on.
I probably have to rethink in terms of electric field and so on. I'm not sure. I mean, I know that if you compute thermodynamic quantities such as free energy and so on, this thing is stable in the regime we are studying. But maybe it's again, so maybe there are better experts in the audience who can address this.
Well, I thought
stability
the electric field is consistently. radial one, the charge density.
Yeah, the mu is
all right.
I mean, it's a source of interesting corrections that everybody's perceived it.
Right. Yes. So, okay, so maybe in the end, where I start mentioning pathologists of the system, we can return to this.
Let me basically more hydrodynamic about it. That is the sound wave, and the sound wave is velocity, and the velocity is, you would think, invariably set by the square root of compression modulus and the mass density. In order for that velocity to go to zero, I mean, in a Fermi liquid, you would say the mass divergence. Can you make any statement about it in this context? That it's localizing, or whether it's just becoming completely compressible?
I don't know.
Can you compute it, the compression modulus?
Yes. All right. So,
sorry, one further thing. So because you are at finite density, you are always in a black hole phase, so there's always some energy dissipating into the black hole.
Not necessarily. I can you can smoothly turn t to zero and that's right. Right. So this slide summarizes more or less what is known analytically about this these poles of the correlator. There is this zero temperature result at zero mass. There is this result at finite mass. Also, at very high temperature, where T in the opposite regime of this Landau thermoliquid stuff, where T is much larger in chemical potential, we have this is density correlator. So we have a diffusion pole as expected, right? So we need there is a diffusion mode in the density of the conserved charge, and this diffusion mode has been computed at very high temperature, fine density, and zero hypermodified with mass, with a diffusion constant which is expressed through hypergeometric function. So this is known. Now, let me turn to the subject of the talk, namely what happens to this mode at finite temperature if you turn on.
The diffusion mode was just a standard high temperature.
That's right. This is the same as you see, for example, in n equals 4 alone, right? But except that this is baryonic charge. So this is a standard diffusion mode, and you can look at this limit. It's very smooth. So we could only do the numerical work because the equations are pretty complicated. And the method is by now standard, so we look at spectral functions of this density-density correlator and the poles in the complex plane, right? If we can see how dynamics of the poles affect the spectral functions and so on. So here, for example, you see the holographic zero sound peak in the collisionless quantum regime, so where temperature is non-zero but very, very, very small. So remember these three regimes, right? So we're sitting in a collisionless quantum regime. You can clearly see the zero sound, finite temperature. There might be other peaks. So as I said, the system is pretty complicated. So in principle, you have, especially for finite mass, right? You have these bound states, which will also appear as peaks in this correlator. But all of this will be somewhere here. Right? So we are sitting in the regime where the only peak that we expect to see is this collective mode. Okay. So if you compute the dispersion relation, again in this collisionless quantum regime, you see the following. So these are numerical data, these dots, black dots, and the red line is the zero temperature analytic result for the zero sound mode. So you can clearly see that the speed, right, the real part, the speed of this holographic zero sound essentially is given by the zero temperature result in this regime. There is some small deviation in the imaginary part, but it's pretty small, and it only appears in the regime where Q bar is sufficiently small. Right? So the moral of these two pictures is that if you're sitting in the collisionless quantum regime, as expected from, let's say, Landauer thermoliquid picture, you don't see strong deviations from the zero temperature result in this dispersion relation. This is what is observed numerically. Now,
just a quick question. Yep. The right side, as you take Q to zero, is this order, is the imaginary rem omega order T over mu, or? And what's setting the scale for the asymptotic value?
Both of these guys normalized by mu.
Right.
So you're asking what is happening, so what causes these deviations?
Yeah, it's
T over mu. Yes. We will see in a moment how this happens precisely. So if you zoom into this, so you can see, so here you can sort of see the appearance of this transition between the collisionless quantum and collisionless thermal regime.
So in this regime, the speed of zero sound as you turn on temperature is still equal to the speed of normal sound.
Yeah, that's right.
So what does...
Essentially, I mean, there are small deviations, but they're really very, very, very tiny.
Is it known what Landau thermoliquid theory says about this?
Not that I know of. I don't know. Okay, so we will continue to raise the temperature, or this parameter Q over mu, and we come to this crossover transition between collisionless quantum and collisionless thermal regimes, which here on this cartoon from Landau thermoliquid is represented by the transition from region 3 to region 2. Right, so of course, the transition is smooth. So this is what we see in D3D7. This is the same sort of the same variables, right? The log of gamma over mu, log of q over mu. And we do see the transition happening at roughly the scale which corresponds to the scale expected from Landau thermoliquid consideration. And it's pretty strong. So you can also find the scaling of log of gamma, the log of q over mu, right, by fitting this plots with some curve. You see the power of this scaling.
It sets in at t is 10 to the minus 4 mu, like so. That you say log t of mu is minus 4. Meaning,
yeah,
T minus four.
That's
Q, right.
Yeah.
But there's still a very low temperature compared.
Yeah. The temperature. Yes. Exactly. Yes. Okay. Here is another plot. Remember, we had the plot of argument of Q as a function of omega, and again, we can plot our numerical results in two regions. And here, you also see this transition happening between the collisionless quantum and collisionless thermal regimes. So these are, again, numerical data. And you can fit the power law dependence of these quantities with some best fit curves, which are done here. Again, so this is the same plot of numerical results to better sort of appreciate this comparison. Again, I put this Landau thermoliquid cartoon here. And the region we are looking at is this region, the transition between regions 2 and 3, right? So this part of the curve here. So you may ask, of course, what happens when you actually go to the region to the left? Because you're supposed to see this transition to the hydrodynamic regime. And this you cannot see, at least in the probe brain limit, because you don't engage the bulk metric degrees of freedom. So you don't see on the level of the current of the density correlator, you don't see this other transition. Should be here, of course, but you don't see it because you are sitting in this artificial probe brain limit. So you don't engage your bulk, right, the metric. Right? So metric is not a thing. But this transition is crossover. Is seen pretty clearly. Now, what happens with the transition from region 2 to region 1, from collisionless thermal to hydrodynamic regime? As I just mentioned, you don't see it on the level of the sound wave. So you don't see, like in helium, the transition from the zero sound to the normal acoustic mode, which in principle you should see, right? But you do see some other transition on the level of the current-current correlator, because you know that in hydrodynamic regime, the density-density correlator has this diffusion mode. And so you expect to see on the level of poles the transition from the zero sound poles from this regime to the hydrodynamic regime in which you only have one pole, which is the diffusion one. Right? So that is expected. And this is indeed what is seen. So again, you raise the temperature, so Q over mu again increases. You cross from collisionless thermal to collisionless to hydrodynamic regime in terms of this parameter. And what happens to the dispersion relation of this zero sound is the following. So you have this almost no dependence on Q over mu for a long time, and then it rather sharply drops essentially to zero. The attenuation also drops, but then this thing happens. So there is an imaginary part of omega, which has now zero real part and non-zero imaginary part. And this red curve is the diffusion mode relationship, which has been computed analytically in previous work. So this is what these numerical dots asymptote to. So this is a diffusion pole.
In this point, is there another pole that comes down that comes up this one?
Yes, I will show in a moment. So this is maybe not very clear picture, but let me present another picture which shows what happens in the complex plane for this density-density correlator. So you have at zero temperature, very low temperature, you have this zero sound mode, which is represented by two poles, right? Because we have plus minus V sound, Q minus attenuation, right? So there are two of them. One is sitting here, one is sitting here. When you start increasing the temperature of this parameter Q over mu, these poles start to move in the complex plane until they collide on the imaginary axis and turn into two poles on the imaginary axis. One of these poles receives down here into the complex plane, and you don't see it anymore. And another pole approaches the origin. So this is the diffusion pole. So this is what happens. I tried to use the wonders of technology right, to show the movie. So nowadays you cannot do without entertainment, right? So, yeah. Blackbird. Right. So okay. So this is what I just described in words. So you have this phenomena of poles colliding, and one of them goes down in the complex plane, and this is the diffusion pole, which comes here and becomes this analytic diffusion mode, which we see. So that is a transition. Yeah, sure.
Do you have an analytic formula for this whole region?
No, but yes, I think there should be, and I have no excuse for... I think there should be one, because this thing looks almost like a perfect circle to me. And I think it's just, well, I should have derived, yeah, so there should be one. So it's natural, so when you talk about the transition between the collisionless regime and hydrodynamic regime, it's natural to define in this picture the moment of this transition as the moment when these poles collide. Right? So it's kind of natural thing to do. And you can detect, so this of course can be repeated for different Qs, different M's, and so on. So this is a whole variety of these data. And then you can study the dependence of this, for example, Q and omega collision, right, so this moment when they collide, as a function of temperature and density, right, and plot this. So this is what I present on the next slide. And you can see, so from this, so this is the moment of the collision, so the transition from the collisionless to hydro regime in terms of Q and omega as a function of the of the temperature, some reason here. The bottom line, so from that, you can try to mimic. So of course, you don't describe the system in terms of quasi-particles as you do in the picture of Landau, but you can pretend that you have some fictitious quasi-particles with a particular mean free path and mean free time, and the dependence of these Q and omega on T and mu can be deduced from this this collision moment, right? So from the dependence of this Q and omega on T and mu, and you just You just assume the dependence. So you, the only parameters that you have is temperature and density or chemical potential, and you assume some dependence of these entropy path and tau on T with some parameter alpha, and you fit this alpha. When you fit this alpha, you discover that alpha with great numerical accuracy is equal to minus 2. Right? So the bottom line is that you have an entropy path and tau of these fictitious quasi-particles scaling as mu over T squared, just as Landau Fermi liquid would tell you. So this is one of the...
So you said that back reaction is important in this hydrodynamic regime because you couldn't get that other fallout to occur. Right. Mm-hmm. But this diffusion, this is, do you think this will still be reliable and not affected much by back reaction?
I don't know. In fact, one may expect with something else. If back reaction is included, to be honest, I don't have a good intuition of what is happening. It might be that this picture is completely gone, completely destroyed. And one thing you know for sure, that this correlator must have a diffusion pole. So it should arise somehow. But in principle, it should also have the normal sound pole as well, right? Because in principle, if you could take a back reaction into account, all these correlators should have, it's a family of the same poles. How exactly, so I don't, it will be something different from so this particular pretty picture, but you know, see, I think it will be gone, but something else will take its place. And in particular, the diffusion pole must be there. So somehow it must arise. Sorry.
Is there a double pole when we still know?
Not really. Again, this is numerics, so it's difficult to... I'm not sure, to be honest.
I mean, that would indicate a very different analytic structure on correlation.
That's right, yes. Yeah. Yeah. I'm not sure about the double pole. I think numerically it's very difficult. In fact, we should ask Richard, who was doing this in numerics, right? So, but numerically, you don't really, you don't hit this moment. And
another question, are there any other poles in this domain of the complex plane?
Yeah, good question. There are some. So somewhere here, you see, so this is, numerically it's very hard to, as we all know, well, most of us know, it's very hard to access poles which are very deep in the complex plane. But Richard told me that he observes at least one or two of them. So presumably there is a standard structure of the poles going like this, somewhere deep inside. But this is the lowest one, so we are sitting in the sort of hydro domain, right, if you want.
So there's no characteristic separation between these poles and some other poles, so we can't sort of
Not that is absurd. No. Recall that in normal, in n equals 4, right, when you see the sound pole, the usual first sound poles, so what happens if you increase Q, for example, right? If you increase Q, they simply move a little bit in the complex plane, and then they become just part of this string of these isolated poles, just first of them, right? But they are not distinguishable in any sort of characteristic way. So you go from this hydro regime to some quantum, deeply quantum regime where they just become part of the string of poles. So I'm not sure what will happen to these guys if you take a back reaction to account, but maybe something similar. All right, I'm almost... Oh yeah, so now pathologies for... Yeah, I'm not sure, so... My student tells me that I should not use the word pathologies because the system, you know... This microscopic model appears to be self-consistent, and there's nothing pathological about it. But let's call it unusual features of the 3D7 thermodynamics. Right. So the conclusion from previous slides is that it appears that this zero sound mode at finite temperature behaves just as expected from the Landau Fermi liquid theory. So now comes this difficult question of how this can be reconciled with other features of the same D3D7 model, which do not display any resemblance to a typical fermionic system, let alone Landau fermion. So one of them is behavior of a specific heat. So at low temperature, T is much less than mu, you can compute, so this is the n equals 4 result, the standard expression for specific heat, which is coming from N equals 4 superand Mills. And then there is this correction, which is coming from this probe brain, from D7 brains. The specific heat scales not linearly with temperature, as we would expect from the fundamental fermions, but as the power t to the 6 normalized by roughly power of potential. I must say that this is a feature of the 3 to 7 system. If you consider some other brain configurations, such as the one considered by Andrea and Manuela, which is Sakai Sugimoto, for example, in Sakai Sugimoto, there is no this pathology, and CV scales linearly with T. So that perhaps this somehow can be. Yeah, I have no explanation for this.
Sorry, can I just say something about this? So when you have the isospin chemical potential instead
right.
of this one,
right.
then there's this condensation to the superconducting phase,
right.
and then this T to the 6 goes away and it's replaced by a T cubed. So you have a
right. Yes. Yes. So it might be that. I think your argument was that this thing is unstable with respect to sort of collapsing into this isospin configuration. Yeah. That is also possible. Yeah. So.
But that's for the isospin. I'm not quite sure what happens in the baryonic
thing. Right. It's not clear. Yeah.
So I have two questions coming from an inference and matter. First, physicist. First, mu is a typical scale of your problem, so may I assume that it's 1 electron volt? So it's a chemical potential, but does it come from zero? So it's of the order of magnitude of the Fermi energy? So 1 eV for mu?
This is a difficult question.
It has to be, no, it's the only scale in the problem, it's a Fermi liquid, so...
It's not
a Fermi liquid.
It's
right.
not...
It's supposed to be a Fermi liquid.
It's
only one scale in the problem, Fermi liquid, so if it has anything to do with it...
Right, so it's related, so mu is related to density, right, so density of this stuff.
Yeah.
Now, in terms of electron volts,
it's an energy, I mean,
common sense. Yes. I don't know about it. It's
an electron, it's salt. If I take any Fermi liquid theory, I would, instead of T much smaller than mu, would be T much smaller than E, if that's a scale.
Yeah. Exactly, yes.
So
except
if
you don't.
If I have a low energy regime, it would be this one.
The trouble is that it appears that we don't see Fermi surface in this.
Picture. Well, you have a scale, it doesn't matter.
You have a scale, yes.
Constant density is the same for Fermi energy. I mean, you have to, at equal zero, you know your particle is related to EF. So,
yes.
I mean, you pile fermions, you pile them up to EF, and that's your scale. So if you tell me you pile up to mu, mu equal EF for me, I'm fine with that.
Okay, good.
Okay.
Yes. So
then my second remark is the Fermi liquid theory has corrections to the Landau.
Yes.
And these corrections are non-analytic and universal.
Uh-huh.
And,
is it visible in zero sound? I mean,
it's visible. It's visible in thermodynamics, but it has never been measured in helium. I mean, helium is not keen enough to measure them.
But the trouble with this model is that in thermodynamics, we don't even see term linear in T.
Yeah, and actually your T, I agree, that's very striking. And even your T cube is kind of analytic because it's a T times T square. So, I mean, if I make an analytic expansion,
right.
It would be T cube, etc.
That's right, exactly. Yeah. So
T square. So what in a lot of Fermi liquid, the corrections are non-analytic, so they are not powers of T square, and they depend on dimension. So all this field structure is really far beyond anything.
But the T cube comes from the fact that there are bosons in this.
So you can rewrite this formula in a number of ways. So one of them would be to take this factor out and treat this as a correction, right? So then you see that this thing is this parameter T over mu cube, right? So we were talking about different scales, T over mu squared. Now here comes T over mu cube, right? Is it something significant or not, I'm not sure, but this is just an observation. So bottom line is that
you can argue that there's some emerging conformal invariance.
My suspicion is that the matter is simpler. So you can take two views sort of of this thing. One of them is that, so there is a microscopic system, which is n equals 4 super minus plus n equals 2 multiplex and so on. And it's honest normal system. You can do various computation in it, right? In particular, in some regime, you have a holographic tool to look into the system, right? Now, there are two, at least I can see two alternatives, right? One of them is that this holographic tool is not quite adequate. For example, you have to take into account back reaction and somehow remedy this tool, right? And the second alternative is what you actually see is what is happening in the system, really, right? So if you are able to calculate by some other means what is happening with a specific heat in the regime which is described by holography, you would also see this dependence, right? So which alternative is correct? I simply don't know. But it would be very nice to resolve this because, again, so let me just finish and then maybe. So the specific heat anomaly or unusual feature. Now, this system also has this standard thing that at zero temperature limit, you have entropy which is not equal to zero, right? So this shares it with some other holographic systems. And then finally, density correlator. It appears that it shows no singularity or any monolithic structure at Q equal to 2 Q Fermi. So you search for this numerically. So you look at this correlator as a function of Q, and you, in principle, you expect to see at some value of Q some feature that would be generic feature of the correlator if you had a Fermi surface. And again, this is numerical, so we don't know if we just miss it or I don't know. But it appears that we don't see this picture. And that has been also, so I think Andrei was also, and Manuela were also looking at the singularity in Sakai Segmenta, right? Not seeing one, and Andy Abanan told me that they did the same recently in this, I think, paper with Johanna and other people. Yes. And also, you haven't seen this thing happen. Okay, so this appears to be a numerical fact.
Yeah, but this correlator is at omega equals zero, right?
At what?
At omega equals zero.
Yeah.
So that one is sensitive to horizon physics.
All right. So let me conclude. So the conclusions are very simple. It appears that Defrida 7 zero sound at finite temperature behaves exactly as Landau Fermi liquid zero sound. Qualitatively, you can see these transitions between these regimes, scaling with temperature, scaling with momentum, all appears to fall into place. And yet, Defrida 7 thermodynamics in the probe brain limit appears to be incompatible with Landau Fermi liquid in terms of these pathologies or unusual features that I just mentioned. So naturally, it would be interesting, first of all, to understand this discrepancy, and then consider other holographic and field theoretic systems to look for similar features. And finally, I would like to mention that I think it would be very interesting to understand this whole story of finite temperature from the holographic RG perspective. And I mostly had in mind here this paper by Demson and Nickel, Dominic Nickel, where they had a different perspective, sort of holographic RG perspective on the zero sound, but at zero temperature. So I think it's possible to generalize it to finite temperature and see if one can recover these numerical results and possibly get analytic formulas, as Sean was suggesting. All right, thank you.
So you showed that these two poles hit, you fixed Q and you varied T and the two poles collided.
Yep.
The T at which that happens is the same for all Q?
No, it depends on
Q.
No, in fact, yes. Okay. Or vice versa, this Q depends on T.
Okay.
That was I was shown, remember, I was mimicking this with some fictitious quasi-particles and the temperature dependence of this particular value of Q on temperature is exactly the one as Landau can look, so one over T squared. Yeah, exactly. Sorry.
Yeah, what you identify is a crossover from a zero sound regime to a high dependent sound regime. I mean, factually, Marx was saying that the sound velocity is vanishing, right? The first sound velocity is just vanishing, the pole is going like this.
No, it's not first sound. No.
No, you say of an imaginary, so a complex omega,
right.
And the real part is vanishing. And the real part used to be sound velocity times momentum, remember? In other words, the time velocity is basically a function of temperature, right?
Yes, yes.
And again, repeat my question, my earlier question. So you say somehow sound is disappearing, and I've only the future part. You also say no, the sound velocity is disappearing, and therefore you only see the attenuation piece of diffusion. And I can again ask this question: the sound velocity is a very simple thing, right? It should be set by the square root of a compression modulus
and
a mass density.
Yes.
The compression modulus you can just compute step.
From thermodynamics. That's right. Yeah.
Right, for the thermal system in isolation, you don't want to know that superconformal mass. You can do that, right?
Yeah, exactly, yes.
And I guess you don't know what the compression modulus is doing.
I do.
You do what happens with the compression modulus.
So the first sound, as I mentioned somewhere in talk, so the first sound is 1 over square root of 3.
Yeah.
Right, it doesn't, so equation of state in the probe brain limit doesn't change. You still have epsilon equal to 3p, although epsilon and p now are non-trivial functions of mu. But the system at mass equals zero, of course, right? So the system still obeys this equation of state. And therefore, the first sound in the probe brain limit doesn't change. It is not affected by these density fluctuations.
Yeah, so you look at
the
equation of state of the fermions in isolation, and your statement is that the compression modulus is finite where the sound velocity is vanishing.
No,
that is a difficult statement. What happens is compression modulus, what happens is the mass density and the sound velocity.
You have a giant nc squared system of
that
of
I understand, but you take your fermions in isolation. Right? You say at zero temperature that fermion system in isolation is basically like a hydrodynamical zero temperature liquid.
But it cannot,
because the fermion number is conserved, it carries a sound wave. Now you raise temperature and say suddenly that conservation is vanishing and everything gets upset. Actually what you really see is that the sound velocity is vanishing. I have a very simple question. Why is the sound velocity vanishing? Because the compression modulus goes to zero, or the mass density goes to infinity. It's one of the two.
If you cure this pathology, like the back reaction, it will not vanish. I mean, it will smoothly transfer.
Yeah, perhaps. But I want to know what happens in this calculation. So you know the compression modulus of the thermal system in isolation, it stays at finite at high temperature, or is it going to zero? It's a simple question.
These are different modes, right? Zero sound.
I'm not interested in different modes. I just want to know what happens with this compression modulus at high temperature in an isolated thermal system associated with a number of...
It's no isolated system, right? The system is coupled to a huge thermal bath.
No, yeah, but you have these fermions there, and you can count them. And to them is associated with volume and pressure, and you can I think, by down in equation state, for the fermions by themselves.
When you take Lagrangian of, let's say, quantum field theory, right? You compute the first sound and zero sound mode, right? So these are different modes. The speeds are different, right?
Yes, it's fine. It's okay.
They don't equal to each other, right? So in this approximation, what is happening is that the first sound, so in principle, right, as a function of coupling, for example, so in this Landau thermal liquid simple model, right, in function of coupling, they approach each other as a parameter of proportional coupling.
I want to know why the sound velocity is vanishing. It's a very simple question. Why is it vanishing?
No, the zero sound velocity is vanishing.
Yeah, why is it vanishing? What's the reason? That is the question I'm asking.
Well, this is what is happening in liquid helium.
No, in liquid helium, we have always finite sound velocity. I talk to it, and all the time, I can use helium sweet to talk to
that's
it.
The whole.
And now you say, in this system, I talk to these fermions, and at some point, the sound velocity is disappearing.
But you have a transition where you have a zero temperature.
No, it's all very smooth, it's all adequately continuous.
Yes, it is.
Right? So there's no sharp distinction between zero sound and first sound. It's a crossover quantitative difference that you see.
Well, there is a qualitative difference between the
numbers.
It's a different type of mode.
No, it's sound in both cases. I can talk through it. You cannot negotiate it. It's very well understood.
At some point, so when you go for this crossover, the usual sound, if you lower the temperature, the usual sound ceases to propagate. It has huge imaginary
that. No, you can talk to it all the time.
Of course, everything is smooth in physics, right? So you don't have
the zero sound is measured to actually, right, the thing you show is you put a loudspeaker on one side, the microphone on the other side, and you at very low temperatures, right. You have the sound wave going through it. No, it's all the time there, as you said, attenuation and the velocity.
Yeah, I think what might make you happy is again to emphasize that we are sitting in this probe brain limit.
Yeah.
If presumably if back reaction is taken into account and you have coupling between the gravitational modes which compute you T mu correlator, right, of the system, and this one, the density correlator, presumably this pole structure, this motion of the poles, will be different, and they will not go to zero. So they will probably stabilize. Right? From these plots of Fermi liquid theory, you expect them not to go to the imaginary axis, but stabilize at some finite position, right? And describe the first sound.
Yes, perhaps,
yes.
I have a much more simple question that I would like to know why the sound velocity associated with this kernel density is disappearing.
Well, again, so you may attribute this to this approximation in the chain. You may ask why.
In this approximation, I want to know it. You can address it. You can basically ask this question: is it because it becomes infinitely compressible?
Yeah. Yeah, no, this is the deficiency of the model.
There's a possibility. Yeah. And when the mass of the fermion is diverting, I can actually make sense to this.
Right?
It's basically what we call the Langlands localization occurring because of the fermion on the heat path.
Yeah, but then.
A completely different way of
thinking. Yes, there is a specific heat thing, right? Because.
No, that would show up in a specific heat easily. It's a completely different story.
Okay.
So to return to this question from earlier about extremal RN.
Right. Right. I was kind of hoping you would forget about it, but right. So there is a rather complex dynamics of poles, which has been investigated by Rob Lee and collaborators, and is currently under thorough investigation by two other of my students. The situation there is slightly different. So you see some collective mode as well, right? We believe that this is it should be smoothly related to this D3D7 stuff, because after all, it's the pro brain sitting in.
Like almost like
all
right.
But the structure of poles is slightly different. So you have these branch cuts and some other features which frankly I'm not prepared to discuss right now, but maybe with some preparation I can answer your question.
A quick related question would be Lipschitz backgrounds. Have you done that?
Yes, we haven't done anything, but of course zero sound was studied in Lipschitz backgrounds, and there is a mode of similar type with a specific dependence of attenuation on Z and so on. So that, it's not clear. I don't know if finite temperature, I don't think finite temperature was discovered. So I think it would be interesting to see in other systems what happens when you turn on temperature in this direction. Okay, thank you for your attention.